today's episode, we're going to try to talk Ohio State, Penn State, Alabama, Tennessee. Ross went to Capitol Hill to get the NIL scoop. And I got a hot pepper story. Yeah, stick around for that.
Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
The South Carolina guy, Graham, he's outraged that the Utah players got cars. They got these trucks to drive around. They've been buying cars for recruits for, I mean, like, ever. Since cars got invented.
Ross Dellinger.
I don't know if it's a throw your hands up moment from a very respected college leader, but it almost seemed that way, right? It almost seemed like, all right, we're done.
And SI's Pat Forty.
You build yourself a beast, you got to live with the beast. That Ryan Day lives with the beast. Nick Saban lives with the beast.
Here's Pat, Ross, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod, and Big Ten's been a little bit big boring so far this season, but that ends Saturday noon, Ohio Stadium, horseshoe. Penn State, 6-0, ranked 6th in the country, visits Ohio State, 6-0, ranked 3rd in the country. Huge game, positioning in the Big Ten. For the Big Ten title, for the Big Ten East, get to Indianapolis and take on those offensively challenged Hawkeyes and college football playoff. As we like to do, we like to put lots of pressure on coaches who are making lots of money. And I think this is a game that features both. We know Ryan Day needs to win every game. He's mentioned 12-0 as the standard at Ohio State. He's been challenging 86-year-olds to fights. He's been a little bristly this year, this won't solve his problem, but it'll get him to it. He could use a win. Any loss by Ryan Day at this point, the Ohio State fans flip out. Meanwhile, we have James Franklin, who absolutely needs a victory because it was 5 years ago that they lost a very close game to Ohio State as they are want to do. And he declared, we've gone from an average team to a good football team to a great football team, but we're not an elite team yet. He later clarified he meant they lost to an elite team, but they are an elite program. Anyway, he is 1-8 against Ohio State. The only victory was in 2016. He's 2-6 against Michigan. He's 3-15 against top 10 opponents. Never made the college football playoff. He has won 70% of his games. They're 17-2 the last 2 years. Two losses, Ohio State, Michigan. They're 6-0, and they are outscoring opponents 279-48. The roster's loaded. Everything's going well at Penn State, except they can't beat Ohio State or Michigan and get over that. Still, they're great, but not elite, as he said 5 years ago. So he needs to win. Pat, let's start with this. Who needs it more? Ryan Day, James Franklin.
Not even close. James Franklin. If Ryan Day has a Michigan problem, James Franklin has a Penn State or an Ohio State problem that's three times bigger. As you mentioned, he's lost 6 in a row to him. He's 1-8. The one time they won, they had Saquon Barkley. I believe they blocked a field goal at the very end to win the game in Happy Valley. They've not beaten any ranked teams on the road, any top 10 teams on the road under James Franklin, 0-9. They have a team who's good enough. They've got to go do it. There's no more, hey, well, we're building, we're getting somewhere, we're getting to something. No, this is time to do it. I don't want to downplay Ohio State, which is very talented, very good, very hard place to play, and has that good win over Notre Dame, but I still don't think this is a vintage Ohio State team. And I think Penn State should match up well against them in this contest. And it's time for James Franklin to get over a horseshoe-sized hump.
Just to play devil's advocate, I will say Ryan Day. And could you imagine, I mean, Ryan Day in 5 years or I guess roughly 4.5 years as coach has lost 6 games. 151 of them, and he's lost the last 2 years to Michigan. And you've seen, you know, the outrage, and you've seen the what the outrage of the fan base in maybe the media as well has done to Ryan Day. You saw it pent up and explode after the Notre Dame game toward a almost 90-year-old Lou Holtz. Could you imagine if he would lose to Penn State at home as a favorite? So because of that, I think this is a bigger game for him, and the pressure is more on Ryan Day.
Yeah, I mean, this is the beauty of this game. The answer is both. I mean, like, I agree with both of you. I don't know what I mean. Both fan bases want more, and both fan bases have some reason. It's not unreasonable to want more. Ryan Day's problem is Michigan, not Penn State, but that just hangs over everything. And this is the game for both schools to get to the Michigan game. Penn Right. State will host Michigan November 11th. Ohio State will go to Michigan on the Saturday after Thanksgiving. I don't know. Let's start with Penn State. Like, it just seems like they're just hit the ceiling. They've had some up and down years. They've not been consistently great. This is probably going to be his fifth double digit win season. But like 2 years ago, they won seven games. Like, they've been up and down. But he does not have the credibility in big time games, and I don't get it. He's an excellent coach. He won at Vanderbilt. He's recruited tremendous talent. You mentioned Saquon Barkley, Micah Parsons, all these guys. The recruiting class for next year is really good. He's got a lot of guys. Does he freeze up at end of games? Is his game thing? Yeah, probably not. Maybe that's it. But it's almost baffling that 10 years in and you don't really have a signature Penn State victory. I mean, like last year beat Utah in the Rose Bowl, right? Like, that's one of their top 10 wins. Does that really still count? Like, okay, it was a great win. That's fun. But he doesn't have that signature moment, really, that truly matters. And this is the team, certainly this one against Ohio State and then getting Michigan at home, where, you know, you look and go, well, this could be that moment for James Franklin to get over that hump.
Yeah, I mean, he does not have the signature win. I mean, like, some of the wins over Michigan were when Michigan was bad, or, you know, certainly nowhere near what it is at this point. So this is the chance to do that. I listened to his entire press conference today, which, kudos to James Franklin, was 48 minutes long.
Wow.
He sat there and answered questions forever. It was impressive.
He likes those things.
He does, and he's good in that setting.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. He's good in that setting. And he said several times that he was trying to practice moderation, and he was not trying to, you know, get too emotionally jacked up and get angry or get, you know, too flippant or anything. But the one thing that came out of all of his conversation that I took is, you know, one of if you're a Penn State fan and you have a nagging concern about this team, it's that they're unexplosive offensively. They don't generate big plays. They don't run, you know, break off big runs. They don't throw deep and successfully there either. Franklin said, you know, in so many words, my takeaway was, if we play the way we've been playing, we're good enough to win, and we will win. We don't have to go in there and all of a sudden start chucking the ball deep. We don't have to, you know, try to gin up a reverse to look for a 30-yard gain. If we do what we have been doing, we are good enough to beat Ohio State. He didn't say that in those words, but that was my takeaway from this. I think he feels like, I mean, they have got studs all over the place on defense. They lead the nation in a lot of defensive categories. They've also played a lot of terrible offenses. This is not a terrible offense they'll be playing this week. Their best thing you can say about their offense, I mean, they're very talented, but they don't turn the ball over. Drew Aller has never thrown an interception in college. 241 passes, incredibly impressive. This first year as a starter, 181 passes without an interception. And Franklin was very laudatory of him for, you know, taking the checkdowns, throwing the ball away, doing what you got to do to not make the big mistake. And that, I think, will be another important factor in this game. So he likes what he's got, and he thinks that they're good enough to go in and win. That's my belief in listening to him and trying to parse through 48 minutes of coach speak, looking for how he really feels.
You know, when you try to come up with a reason, because you look at what James Franklin has done at Penn State in his 10 years, and year three, he won 11 games. Year four, he won 11 games. And then since then, he's won 11 games a couple times, and he's won 9 games, you know, a time or two. It's just kind of been up and down a little bit. And you look at all those really good teams, the ones that have won 11 games, which has been four of his previous 9 seasons, his teams have won 11 games. Pretty remarkable. But in all those years, of course, it was Ohio State and or Michigan, right, that has stopped them from getting into the playoff. I remember doing the math on an expanded playoff, a 12-team playoff, and how that would have worked the last decade. And I think Penn State led the field in getting in a large berth. Like they got they would have gotten the most at large berths of a 12 team. I think they would have got in like at least 4, if not 5 times during his tenure. But you look at those years, and it's always standing in the way as Ohio State, Michigan, and usually, as I recall, and you guys might recall something different. Like as I recall in those games, the issue stopping them is exactly what Pat just mentioned. It always feels like a lack of explosive offense that would keep up with the Ohio States and Michigans. But to that end, their defense is incredible. They haven't played the hardest schedule, like Pat said. But take a look at these rankings. You know, total defense number 1, passing defense number 1, rushing defense number 3, scoring defense number 2, only behind Michigan, 8 points a game. This has the makings of 13-10.
Yeah. I'm interested to see about these. The stats are incredible, but you've got an Iowa and a UMass in there.
Yep.
Both not just shutouts, but utter. Well, we know Iowa's 133. UMass can't be far away. So, yeah. You know, part of that is Penn State. But yeah, I agree. This is not going to be part. What's got them is they blow leads. They led in the fourth quarter. The last 3 losses in Columbus were decided in the fourth quarter. They led last year in Happy Valley 21-16 with like 9 minutes left. And then they fell apart and got beat big. Like they lost 44-31. Marvin yeah. Harrison went crazy. So they collapse a little at the end. I read through James. I watched a little. It is long. And you know, there was that viral like thing with the reporter saying, "Hey, just chuck it deep." You see that like this week?
Yeah, that was last week. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. And James Franklin's reaction. And I kind of felt bad because when a coach, press conferences, I appreciate they're televised because I can watch, right? But they shouldn't be televised because like it's a back and forth. And when a guy comes out and talks for 48 minutes a week and then does other conversations, It's not like one of these like White House briefings where you have to have like your, you know, "Mr. President, do you believe in this tax cut?" Right. That type of thing. It's like you're having a conversation. So it's a little more casual, and that kind of just blew up on them. But I thought he was very interesting in his coach talk was how focused he is on trying to not make this game anything more than another game. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, I'm sure he does that every week. He always tweets out 1-0 or just mm-hmm. tweets out the name whoever they're playing. But I do think it's a big thing for this Penn State team to just say, "Let's just go in, let's play defense, let's play our game, let's walk out of there. Let's not worry about blown leads last year. We can't close these guys out." All that stuff, because it is sitting there for Penn State. But at some point, Penn State's got to grab it. I'm not saying you fire James Franklin. You don't. He's a good coach. But it's just sort of like Penn State fan, it's just got to be very frustrating year after year after year just being like, because it's not even like Wisconsin or Iowa. We talk about these other schools that maybe you can't make it, or Kentucky's never really going to win the SEC. Like, Penn State's got no reason not to be as good as Ohio State and Michigan.
Sure.
Now, they always have had losing records against those teams. Franklin kind of alluded to that one a little bit today. Like, Penn State joined the Big Ten in 93. So with Joe Pa and Bill O'Brien, they went 7-14 against Ohio State and 6-10 against Michigan. Now, those are better than his records. But it's hard to beat these guys.
Right.
Penn State should be able to do it a little more often than this.
That's the thing, and that's the program's aspiration, and it's not an unrealistic aspiration. I mean, we are in really a great era for Ohio State football. There aren't many bad eras, but this has been especially good the last 10 years. They won a national championship in 2014. They've been regularly in the playoff. They have won the Big Ten over and over and over. They dominated Michigan for a long stretch. Last couple of years, not so much. So, I mean, you're playing good Ohio State teams every year. But yeah, every once in a while, you want to say, we have the best team in the Big Ten. We have a national championship contender if you're Penn State. They've won national titles. They expect to be in that realm. And so the opportunities like this year, when I think they really can win in Columbus, they have not been... They've been in the game a lot. They just haven't gotten it done. This year, I think they've got as good a chance as we've seen since Saquon Barkley was wearing their uniform.
So what's the reaction Ohio State-wise if they lose this game? Ross? Or Pat?
They seem to be up in arms. It wouldn't be great. I think that... We'd probably get a more fire from Ryan Day, and it would make even more important that Michigan game this year if it's possible to make it more important. But if you lose to Penn State or any other Big Ten game before that one, right? It makes it a lot bigger.
Yeah, it would be bad. I mean, Dan, I remember we were standing together on the sideline in Ohio Stadium last year when they were losing, they were about done against Michigan, and the fans were yelling stuff at Ryan Day. And I mean, that would probably be a repeat scenario if they lose this game. And it would make Michigan an absolute must win if you want to still stay in contention for all the things Ohio State wants to win. And that's a tough thing. We still don't fully know about Michigan because we just haven't seen them against great competition. But the suspicion is out there that Michigan's actually the best team in the league. And so going into Ann Arbor and beating them would be a very tall task. So don't put yourself in a position where that is absolutely has to happen to still be in contention. So it is a major, major game for Ryan Day as well. No doubt about it.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, obviously, it'd make life uncomfortable, but you still have the Michigan game. You beat Michigan, and it solves some problems, and you can still win the Big Ten. It's hard though, because I suspect the only teams that can beat these teams are each other. So, I don't really see anybody else in the Big Ten beating Ohio State, Penn State. So, if you lose that game, you can hope Michigan beats them. Let's say Penn State beats Ohio State. Ohio State can hope Michigan beats Penn State, and then they can go into the game and get a tie, and you'll have to figure out how to set that up. What do they do? The rankings, playoff rankings?
I had this in the dash last week, because you can kind of see a three-way tie between those three and the tiebreakers. You go down the key tiebreaker would be conference record of your Western Division opponents. Which is one reason why Iowa beating Wisconsin could be very big for Penn State. Because Penn State's already played Iowa. The other two don't. Ohio State plays Wisconsin. If it gets to that. If it goes beyond that, it goes to
so the... ridiculous.
I believe... I looked at multiple scenarios. There might be one that involves the Sports Source Analytics team ranking.
I just really wanted to involve Iowa. I really want Iowa to be a part of this tiebreaker. We got to have Iowa a part of this tiebreaker. Not only that, let's have that 15-6 game as part of this tiebreaker.
Yes,
please,
yes.
Please.
That would be,
I think it's – okay, they have a one-week – they have a four-day stretch. Which state drinks the most swarm beer to fund the Iowa collective? And then Iowa – then whoever Iowa then selects that team. That's how I think they should do it.
And then Iowa wins the Big Ten in 3 years because of their collective.
Yes, that would be kind of like – it's kind of like when you storm the field, you got to pay the other team in the SEC. Yeah. It's a little like – I don't know. Yeah. If Iowa somehow decides it – I don't want to know. I don't want to know. Anyway, look, at big, like I said, Big Ten hasn't been great. It's going to get really good now. We got three games. That's the whole – isn't a whole lot else out there that makes you too impressed. In the Big Ten, but this is going to be that. All right, other big game this weekend we want to talk. Rematch of last year's one of the games of the year, maybe the game of the year. I don't know how we wanted to do it, but certainly one of the scenes of the year. Tennessee upsets Alabama in Knoxville. Absolute bananas. Orange everywhere. Josh Heupel smoking a cigar on the field. Fans tear down the goalpost, carry it out of the stadium, and throw it in the Tennessee River. Just pure pandemonium. Tennessee is back. It has been a shaky start for both teams, but they are both arriving at this game, third Saturday in October, with just one loss. And everything in front of them is a possibility. Same thing. Who's it mean more for? Ross, who needs this more? Tennessee? Alabama?
I'm going to go Tennessee on this. And I say that because, well, first of all, the Vols already have a loss, right? So they can't sustain another one and have any shot at, you know, the CFP or even probably to that matter representing the SEC East in the championship game. Alabama's undefeated in the West, right? So they could lose another one, at least make the championship game. But I say that for other reasons too. If we all remember the streak in this series, right, in I think it was 16 or 15 games in a row that Alabama beat Tennessee until last year's dramatic overtime game in Knoxville. And I think there's a lot of pressure on Josh Heupel this year to follow that season. And after the disappointment of losing at Florida, you know, I think that there's expectation level to, honestly, after what happened last year, you know, in Knoxville, to go in and win the game, to win this game. And Alabama, again, has shown, and you hear other coaches talk about it, we've talked about it in the show before, they're beatable this year. They're vulnerable this year, right? They have a struggling offensive line. I think they're allowing more sacks than any team but a couple in the country. And then, obviously, at the quarterback position that they have, you know, Jalen Milroe has struggled at times in the decision making, and in the accuracy is kind of a roller coaster. So they're vulnerable, they're beatable. Got to get them this year. Remember Lane Kiffin and even some Ole Miss players saying that. So I'm going to put the needs it more on the Vols.
Oh, I disagree with you strongly there. I think Alabama very much needs it more. Alabama is accustomed to playing for championships. And if they lose this game, they're not playing for a national championship. They may still end up playing for an SEC championship, but it gets trickier. Tennessee, I mean, the celebration last year tells me that's one of those things that, like, for at least a lot of the fans, they can live on that for a lifetime. That was so wild. And, yeah, they'd sure like to win again, but Alabama expects to beat Tennessee regularly. Losing twice in one season in Bryant-Denny Stadium, oh Lord, we don't want to see that. So I think that Alabama, this, if for a lot of reasons, this is a must-win game for them. I do think, I mean, if we think Penn State and Ohio State's going to be a grunt and grind, you know, low-scoring game, so's this one. Tennessee's defense is so much better this year. I'm very impressed. They're actually second in the SEC in yards per play allowed, behind only Georgia and barely behind Georgia, and third is Alabama. Two really good defensive teams, two up-and-down offensive teams, especially at quarterback. And so I think this is going to be a real kind of fierce trench, back-and-forth, punt-a-lot battle. But I think Alabama needs to win more.
I agree with Pat on this one, but I can see both. This is the beauty of this game, everyone. This is why they're rivalry games. But a season where Alabama is eliminated early is a shock to the system. In Tuscaloosa, we've discussed that already this season, and this one would pretty much eliminate them. Obviously, you'd have the you could still win the SEC, which matters. But dying to see Jalen Milroe and that offensive line of Alabama that has been shaky go against that Tennessee defense. I agree. That is a much different Tennessee game. It'll be funny. This probably will play out. I mean, last year was just a straight shootout. This is going to be, unlike that. It's kind of funny how in one, we'll see how it plays out, but one year you could have two teams and two programs have a such a different type of game go down. But can Jalen Milroe handle that? I don't know. And can they get 60 minutes out of him? Like, they just haven't been able to just walk away from people. Maybe Ole Miss they did a little bit. But, like, they let A&M stay in it. They let Arkansas get back in it. It's not Alabama. That's not how Alabama does stuff. So
I blame them walking away from Ole Miss on Ole Miss.
Yeah, Ole Miss just didn't show up, right? Mm-hmm. But they should have blown out A&M. I get it's on the road, but – and I think you see it. You see Saban happy with just victories. I mean, he's ranting and raving on that sideline and all that, but he's not happy with a lot of things. But, you know, I think he knows this isn't one of those teams that's perfect. All right, other big SEC news, Brock Bowers, Georgia's star tight end and a heck of a player, ankle surgery. Out 4 to 6 weeks. Hard to say what that means. Is he back for an SEC championship game? Is he back for the playoffs? Georgia, it gets to that. Does he come back at all? I assume he is. That seems to be the expectation. But I have no idea. If I was Brock Bowers after winning two titles and all that and got a heck of an NFL future, I think, you know, maybe you play it by ear and see how this goes. But he's a heck of a talent. As a college football fan, I sure hope he's back in four. But that is that's a big injury. They have a lot of depth. They have Oscar Delp, who is solid, but it's hard to replace a guy like Bowers, right, Pat?
He's their best player. Arguably, well, I mean, you could make a case he's the best player in college football. I think he's absolutely one of the top five best players in college football, maybe 10. And so losing him, and he has been such a big part of when their offense has clicked in, a lot of it's been because they've thrown to him. I mean, his receiving stats went up appreciably a few games ago, where he went first three games, it was kind of like, you know, they were using him some, and then all of a sudden, 121 yards, 157 yards, 132 yards. He became kind of that big play focal point that they needed in the passing game, and then he gets hurt, and now the schedule's got a bit tricky here, guys. I mean, they've got this open date this week, so they can work on things without Brock Bowers. But Florida is 5-2, rivalry game, neutral field. Don't overlook that one. Missouri, then, is 6-1, and sometimes there's a hangover coming off of that cocktail party. Then one loss Mississippi, then one loss Tennessee in Knoxville. That's a pretty tough four-game stretch there that we're finally going to get to see Georgia get tested a bit, I think, and being tested without Brock Bowers probably for all of that, and that's going to be very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, he's got more than 200 yards receiving, more than the next Georgia receiver, and he's a tight end. You know, it's wild, and he's got double, I think, touchdowns, four. than any other receiver, single receiver on the team. I was talking to somebody with Georgia this morning, in fact, and I said something about, you know, playing Florida without Brock Bowers, and you could just see the look on his face of terror, basically, even though Florida has struggled this year. But like Pat said, you know, you're not a neutral field, and you're losing, you know, your best player. You're without your best player. I mean, that's going to be an interesting one to watch. You know, and he's going to. I mean, I'm sure he's going to be out for the game, right? He's this tightrope surgery that he's having, which I did this big story about 4 years ago on the tightrope and the tightrope surgery, which is pretty fascinating, and it's pretty much an automatic month out. You know, certainly 3 weeks at the very minimum out. And I was going to read it just like a few lines because I don't know that people know a whole lot about the tightrope surgery. But a normal ankle sprain, you know, the normal traditional treatment is to rest and rehab it, or they insert screws into the bone and they bind them like you would, you know, a pair of 2x4s, like a nail would bind a pair of 2x4s. You bind each bone, the tibia and the fibula. Tightrope, they slip in a kind of a high strength suture through a small holes in the bone, drilled in the bone, and kind of fasten them together and tighten it like a zip tie. So you can imagine, instead of a nail into your ankle bone that fastens the two bones together, it's like a zip tie. So it's a lot more quicker of a recovery, and it Tua Tagovailoa, they used it on him back about 4 years ago, and he came back. It was like incredibly quick, and that's when it became really kind of like noteworthy and notable is how quickly he, I think it was around 3 weeks or so that he returned off of a high ankle sprain. So I guess it's possible for him to be back in 3 weeks, but Brock Bowers is a little heavier than Tua. So, you know, this could be knocking him out for 4 to 6 weeks.
Sure. Yeah, that's when we first got to look at Mac Jones as a starting quarterback, was when Tua went out with that tightrope.
Yeah.
Zip tie. It's crazy.
I want a zip tie in an ankle.
Other foot injuries in the SEC? The Cock Commander, South Carolina coach Shane Beamer. Broke his foot after Florida loss. Quote, "I certainly was a gut-wrenching emotional loss." They blew a double-digit lead to the Gators. "I was frustrated and kicked something I shouldn't have kicked and thought I was okay. The adrenaline of the game wore off, and before anyone starts the narrative, the head coach is frustrated and lost his poise and all that. No, I care about these kids. I was really upset Saturday night because I didn't do enough to help them get over the hump and win the football game. I don't think I have to have surgery, but there's a broken bone in my foot. It hurts like you know what. I've got to show toughness and fight through it. It's been one of those years. Cock Commander getting tough. Grit. Let's go, grit. We hope he recovers. Ouch. A lot of fans have been known to bust their feet and punch their TV and drywall and hit the stud and bust their hand. So... can't say you care any. Coach Beamer doesn't care as much as you.
That's right. That's right. He channeled his inner Cluck Norris rage there. And,
yeah.
I want to know what he kicked. I really do. We need some investigative work down there in Columbia.
Yeah, that's what I want to know too. Yeah.
Kicked something I shouldn't have kicked.
Yeah. Hopefully not a person.
No, not a lot of give there.
No.
Not a lot of give there. Also maybe, in South Carolina. Oh, what do you got, Pat?
Maybe kicked that horrendous giant cock statue they got outside the.
Oh, that could be.
You know, no given that.
What did Shane Beamer kick? The College Football Inquirer investigation begins.
We'll get on it. We're not done. Ongoing saga. William Christopher Sweeney didn't kick anything, but he's not pleased with the unrealistic expectations of fans of Clemson. I don't know if he said unrealistic. I'm reading a story here. More like high expectations. Quote, "We're at a point where if you don't go undefeated, you are losers. You're terrible." And that's just such a terrible mindset. And honestly, maybe we need to lose a few games to lighten up the bandwagon. Sometimes the bandwagon get a little too full. That is one good thing about going through a little so-called adversity. You really find out who is with you and who is not. Ross, thoughts on Coach Sweeney? Saying maybe they should lose some fans. His point is correct.
I kind of understand where he's coming from. I mean, he has. It's kind of one of those things where you're a product of your own success, sort of thing. Like you've raised, and he has raised expectations there so high to where, you know, a bad year is losing one or two games. So I think that that he, you know, he's realized that, especially the last few years when they've missed the playoff. Are they going to miss the playoff for a third straight year, barring something crazy this season happening? And I think there's a little frustration there. I think he's hearing about it. And there's one thing about Dabo Swinney, you know, he will tell you how he feels pretty bluntly about the fans. He will talk about them and talk about how they feel and how it makes him feel. And this is another example of that.
Yeah. I'm not sure he's getting $11.5 million a year to run off some of the fan base, but, you know, I do appreciate, yes, the candor. But look, this is – you build yourself a beast, you got to live with the beast. Yeah. That Ryan Day lives with the beast. Nick Saban lives with the beast. Jim Harbaugh now lives with the beast after they did put up with at least losing one big game every year. So, you know, with the good comes the challenges. So I can't say I feel terrible for Dabo. I understand his point. It is like impossible to keep winning at the level they were. I mean, they had an unbelievable stretch from 2015 through 2020, I guess it was. You win two national titles, you're in the playoff every stinking year. You could have almost won a couple more. Fantastic, unbelievable run. Not realistic to keep it going, but don't tell that to the 82,000 that come to Death Valley every day, every weekend.
Broken bones, bruised feelings. It's tough in South Carolina right now.
It is.
I like Coach Sweeney. You know, he's a little more. Shane could learn from Dabo. Like, don't kick, just emote. It's a little more therapy. Just emote. Just say, I'm frustrated. Don't kick anything. You got a broken bone now. All right. The 10th NIL hearing took place today in Washington. Our Washington correspondent, Ross Dellinger, was there. I, for reasons I can't explain, listened to the whole dang thing.
You did, so I didn't have to. Thank you.
We're going to get to some news because Ross has some good says some news on this. But let me recap. And you can, before we get to your kind of breaking news, tell me where I'm wrong on some of this. Okay, so these senators, it's better than the House of Representatives, which is a total clown show, pretty much. The senators, though, they don't really, they just don't have a grasp of the issue. They're just all over the place. And it stuns me that the NCAA keeps going back to these people when you listen, and they just, they're a mess. And I'm not even talking about, like, the guy from Missouri starts asking Charlie Baker about the students at Harvard making statements about the possible war and the war in the Middle East, right? Like, this has nothing to do with college athletics. We had transgender swimmer. Okay. Maybe that's a separate one. We had a number of senators were on the transgender. The senator from Minnesota, she says, well, we're hosting the gymnastics Olympic trials this summer. And she asked Big Ten commissioner what they're doing to protect gymnasts after the Larry Nassar scandal.
Good glory.
Very important issue. Not this issue.
No.
So you have this sort of just mayhem from these guys. You're like, what are we doing? They're not really holding a hearing to solve a problem. They're just doing sound bites they can put out on their own social media. That's what it seems like to me. Or they do. And then every one of them's going to tell you who won a national title in their state. Blumenthal was in charge. He's from Connecticut. Is that right? I think he's fucking
right.
I don't even think he believes what he's saying. He keeps saying there's a problem, but then he kept being like, oh, Joe Manchin, West Virginia, he comes out and starts saying that it's ridiculous that these kids are in these bidding wars and all that. Okay, but he's like, when I was going to college, I would have paid to play college athletics.
You got $30 for laundry. Every
you got
month,
$30 for laundry. He's bringing up this stuff from the 1960s, and I would have paid. Okay, that's great. Well, do you want Caleb? What's your point? Should Caleb Williams pay? Caleb Williams play? Should Michael Penix pay Washington? And he's like, when did this become about money? Like, you're like, when did it become about money?
Like
75 years ago. Like, what are we doing? The South Carolina guy, Graham, he's outraged that the Utah players got cars. They got these trucks to drive around. They've been buying cars for recruits ever since cars got invented.
Yeah, right. They used to have to lie about it. Now they don't have to lie.
Okay. Then you got
getting so fired up, man.
I can't remember which one.
His face looks like a red apple.
I don't even know what was going on. Then there was somebody else. I forgot what state. I forgot what gender or state this person was. Some senator was saying that because the problem is no one's going to enforce these NIL laws, which is true. This has been my point the whole time. Stop trying to do NIL laws. You can't enforce them. Let the free market go. You cannot enforce this. This is an unenforceable thing. They said, I think it was a woman, I don't remember what Senate, what state, that the state attorney generals should take this over.
Oh, God.
Okay, so is the state attorney general in Alabama going to launch an investigation into the University of Alabama?
Issues we have right now at NIL, right? The state they don't enforce the state laws
because
why would they do? Yeah, why would they do that? Why would they disadvantage their own public universities?
Would we like to lose the election? These people are like,
the attorney general in Alabama investigates Alabama for NIL violations. Yes, you will have a new attorney general at the first available opportunity.
Also, now I live in Michigan. Our attorney general is famous for getting trashed at the Michigan State game a couple years ago and having to get wheeled
out.
My
favorite attorney general.
Yes, we has kind of an endearing part. But I don't know what my attorney general's doing on a day-to-day basis, but I'm hoping like they're busting like, you know, there's a factory that like leaks some poison into the water, or they're like trying to make sure I don't know, whatever attorney generals do. I don't want them worrying about this.
No.
I want them doing real things that affect me, not like, did this guy choose Michigan over Ohio State because he's going to get a couple. I don't care. That's not going to impact my life. So, like, I just sit there and I listen to their comments, and they're so out of touch. The only one I was impressed with was the guy from Louisiana. Who basically was like, this is all about the players getting the money now, right? Like, that's really, and it was like, yeah. Like, it's just, like, do they walk out of there and are they, like, proud of, do the senators leave Bross and go, that was good? Does anybody walk out and go, that was a real productive time? Because I looked at it and said, this is stupid.
I believe that actually the last few things that Senator Blumenthal said was this was a productive hearing. I believe
it was not
gavel and into the hearing. So, hey, it was. I will say it was more productive and had more substance to it than a lot of the House hearings have had. There were a few, you know. I like to say don't let NIL distract you from the real issue here, which is athlete employment. And the future of the athlete compensation model, like all this stuff about the Utah trucks, all this stuff about state preemption and these state laws and how difficult it is. You know, this is not the number one issue or concern any longer. I think it was the last 3 years or so.
They wasted their time for 3 years
basically.
I've been yelling at them for 3 years.
And now they're trying, you know, the NCAA and college leaders are trying to roll all of their requests for NIL right, into a bill that actually would address athlete employment and give them, you know, some kind of protection or antitrust to enforce those rules that we're talking about, so they're not sued. So those are kind of the main issues, more so, right? Is the employment issue and the antitrust issue, not all this little kind of stuff about NIL and state laws and, you know, all of that. So we're starting to switch now, finally, toward the more important kind of issues as these court cases get closer and closer to reaching a resolution.
But it's just them coming up with the latest calamity. They spent all these years telling us the last thing was going to kill it, and it didn't. They have no credibility. They're always, always wrong.
Yeah.
Next one.
Right. I mean, yeah, I did. I spoke to an AD today who said that, yeah, the looming one is the House, Grant House lawsuit that could.
So really, what happened to all the other looming ones that they said were going to kill us?
Well,
have we just given up? And they we lost. Now admit they were
they
wrong.
Lost them.
They were lost.
Yeah, they lost them.
They were Austin wrong on all of it.
I guess the latest. Yeah.
They were wrong. I was right. They were wrong. I was right. And guess what? I'm right on this one too. All right. Tell us what your development is, though. We do have a development in this ongoing
side. Yeah, I go to these hearings, and it's been 10. I think I've attended 8 of the 10.
Good.
And I early on, you know, writing about the hearing seemed to make sense. They were new, and you know, there were some news that would come out. But we're deep into it, right? So I try to not write about the hearing as much as I can. And there was a couple of lines in the written testimony of Notre Dame AD Jack Swarbrick, who we've had on the show, actually, I think last year, talk about this issue. And there were a couple lines in his written testimony that I found interesting. And after the hearing, he wasn't asked about it during the hearing, which was unfortunate. But after the hearing, I approached him, and the lines were about how Congress should carve out a model to where athletes can negotiate, I believe is what he wrote in his written testimony, with conferences. So, which basically is collective bargaining. And interviewed him after the hearing to expound on that, and he did. And he talked about how I don't know if it's a throw your hands up moment from a very respected college leader, but it almost seemed that way, right? It almost seemed like, all right, we're done. It's over. I'm done waiting. Let's do it. We just need to bargain with the athletes. And of course, though, he, like many other college leaders, don't want athletes to be employees. And a lot of athletes don't want to be employees. I think that's been made pretty clear. So how to bargain collectively with athletes if they're not employees? And I explained it in the story. We just posted on Yahoo Sports. But there is some precedent for this. You got to go back 100 years to the 1926 National Railway Labor Act. To find where Congress legislated collective bargaining. And so basically Congress would have to carve out a special exemption to allow athletes in conferences to bargain collectively without those athletes being employees. The athletes would be still considered students. I mean, it's a big hill to climb, obviously. Just like to get Congress to do anything. You know, we're on 4 years and 10 hearings and a dozen bills and nothing has passed on NIL. This would be another hurdle. It would. But for leaders are starting, and really respected leaders, to come out and speak out about different models in radically different models. And this is the second time we've seen it in a month. After a House hearing last month, we heard from Gene Smith, who said that he believes the scholarship structure of the NCAA should change, and it should include, like, Alston and cost of attendance and tuition and board, room and board. It should include NIL, and the school should be able to directly pay athletes for NIL. We've got Gene Smith, and we've got Jack Swarbrick, right, two of the most respected leaders, I think, in the industry, and who are both retiring, right?
I was going
to say,
two years that are leaving next year.
Yeah. And now they're kind of talking about, hey, yeah, hey, guys, y'all should change.
Yeah.
You know, you need to change. Before the courts say, do this, XXX, you should do it now.
Yeah, that's the interesting part of this, is here's how this needs to go down. Now, it's up to you guys to fix it and deal with it. We're out. But it does signal, and those are two smart guys and big voices that I think that people have realized exactly where the train's going and not turning around, and prepare for that reality as best they see fit. Now, to Dan's point, you know, this doesn't necessarily mean the entire enterprise is going to hell in a handbasket. But everybody needs, I think, to at least prepare for major, major changes in athlete compensation. Again, we've seen some huge ones starting with the NIL stuff, but there's going to be more, and it could be more profound.
Why? Charlie Baker, NCAA president, said he had not met a single athlete who wanted to be an employee. That struck me as absurd. First off, there's like a bunch of basketball players at Dartmouth trying to unionize. So just drive up Charlie.
Yeah, they want a minimum wage.
Yeah. You can drive up there. It's beautiful this time of year. So check the leaves, check the foliage, and talk to the Dartmouth basketball team if you want. But why? I was asking. I don't understand. Why would an athlete not want to be an employee?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I think there's a bunch of reasons. Well, number one, first of all, they probably wouldn't be able to transfer freely one time and play immediately like they do now, right? You would, just like any employee, you would probably, most of them, especially at the high level, would have a contract with the school that would bind them to that school. Number two, depending on the parameters of the contract that they have with a school, they could be fired. You've seen, I guess, administrators and even some coaches say that, you know, why would you want to be an employee? We could fire you, sort of thing. Number three, a lot of the benefits that the universities and the resources the universities use and give athletes, whether it's training table or, you know, some of this unlimited meals a day and all this stuff, you know, mental health things could become taxable. So those are some of the issues, right? And then I think a fourth one would be, you have a salary in the Pennsylvania case, because there's a bunch of different avenues where athletes will eventually probably be deemed employees. It's coming, and one of them is the Pennsylvania case, which requires only minimum wage. Well, Dan, I mean, many athletes now at the Power 5 level were making way more, for football players at least, than minimum wage. So it could lock you potentially
so the employment,
in some kind of salary.
Well, this would all be negotiated, right?
Yeah.
So I would think that they would be able to do all right, although I've said before, this would be an extremely weak union, because I don't believe they'd be able to strike. So I think you could run an extremely management. And this is why I've said they really should get ahead on this. And if management, the schools, should be able to drive an extremely hard bargain, because this isn't the UAW. You're not shutting down. You're not getting all 10,000 football players, let alone hundreds of thousands of athletes, to all strike. It's just not happening. It's a very weak union. But it would seem that a lot of that stuff would be negotiated out. So what they're saying is, if you are an employee, you're no longer allowed to get outside income again, unless that's negotiated.
I guess
is that the athletes are being told,
well,
I don't know, maybe they're not
yeah
being
what
told
what
the whole story.
How has it been explained to the athletes? Has it been explained like exactly, you know, like Ross was saying, are these ADs or NCAA people putting a questionnaire in front of you that says, would you like to be an employee? By the way, that also means we can fire your ass and do these other things.
You can
things.
Do that now.
Yeah, but I wonder what
yeah,
the, what's
no,
the
I,
framing
I agree, yeah.
of
How
the
is this being framed? What's the information
yeah.
on this?
Also, you got to keep in mind, like, you know, again, I'm just taking the Pennsylvania case as a minimum wage. You know, it argues for minimum wage for athletes. But look at some of the other cases. even in California, there was a revenue sharing bill that would require the sharing of revenue. And I don't know the exact numbers, but it depends on how much your sport would make in revenue. You would have to share it and required to share it with athletes. And if you break down some of those numbers, I just wonder if, you know, they are more than what with at least Power Five football players are making right now. I mean, I think the average Power Five football player is in the ballpark of an average. This is average of $30,000 to $50,000 a year in NIL payments, mostly from collectives, with a wide range. Right, some of them getting seven figures, some of them getting high six figures. But the minimum average is like around probably $30,000 to $40,000, and you wonder if they would get that.
So here's what I want to know. Why don't the schools just say, we don't want employees, we don't want to pay these guys, this is opening, why don't we just let them, why do you not just let it continue as is? What is happening that, and I'm not talking about the scared senators, but like they have to be watching this and going, oh, this is inconvenient, or I'm a coach, I don't like it, or, I mean, Joe Man, he's just up there whining. He's, oh, this isn't what it's supposed to be. You can't just leave, or, oh, you know, he's looking for better deals. Like, that's just your feelings. That's not, like, really anything bad happening in the world. It's just your feelings. So, like, why not just get out of the way? Why cause, like, employing all these people will be a, gosh, it's just a Herculean effort for these schools.
Yeah, they do not want to do it.
Most
of them won't do. Right?
They should be in Congress saying, we don't want them to be employees. We're going to let them make all the money they can on the side. We don't care.
Well, but that's the thing, though. That, you know, the courts are going to rule, right? And the National Labor Relations Board has already said, the general counsel has already said that she believes, right, that college athletes are employees. So no matter what. So now, again, the argument has changed to Congress. Really, from NIL, it's kind of evolved into, please prevent athletes from being employees.
They wasted all these years arguing stuff they were never going to get.
Scared to death, you know, of
their shadow.
Players getting endorsements or getting pay for play and the transfer portal.
And they
look at the previous leader.
10% of fans would no longer watch the sport. That's what they asked. That's what they said to the Supreme Court.
TV ratings are higher than ever.
Mm-hmm. The talent will all go to Alabama. It's more parody. They were clowns for these years.
We have to look at the previous leadership, I think, too. Right.
Yeah.
Remember, there was an athletic director summit in 2019, actually up here in D.C. where Mark Emmert spoke to all the ADs. This is summer of 2019.
Why were they listening to him, though? Why were they listening to him?
Well, I mean, I know, but, you know, he was president of the NCAA. And he said then, you know, this is the biggest crisis we're dealing with. And he pushed back so hard against it for so long that I think, but now I think the argument has evolved. And Charlie Baker, you know, outlined, I think, four or five things that the NCAA has modernized over the last three or four years based on these hearings, right? Based on what lawmakers have said to do. The transfer stuff, obviously the NIL stuff, but that was more because of state law. But the transfer policies, the scholarship, postgraduate scholarship, postgraduate health care, they're trying to check off all of these boxes to appease lawmakers but they fought for so long to get what they want. But I want to mention something. St. Joe's athletic director, Jill, I think it's Bodensteiner, was on the witness list. And she made such a great point. And it's one that we talked about endlessly on this show. And I think we talked about it during my time with Greg Sankey a couple weeks ago about the split coming at some point from the NCAA, whether it's FBS or Power Five, because these schools are not like-minded, right? And she said, you know, St. Joe's has a athletic budget of $20 million. And to give, you know, everybody some idea, you know, St. Joe's is in the same division with a $20 million budget as the University of Texas with a $225 million budget. I mean, Texas gets $50 million every year in just donations. And she said, why are all NCAA athletes in jeopardy of becoming employees based largely on the issues in one sport?
Right.
And not just one sport, but one sport at the highest level, because a lot of football programs lose money and don't create revenue to pay players.
Right.
And Charlie Baker talked about the 5%, and there's the 5%, and it may even been more like 2%, really, of the NCAA that has the money to do this, and everybody else, as he says, especially in D2, D3, and even some in D1, Charlie Baker said, would, you know, shutter their athletic departments or become club teams because it would not be worth it. They do not have the money to pay salaries.
I don't believe that at all. Division III sports make money for the schools because these kids wouldn't go to the school except
the enrollment. Right.
Yeah. They're paying $70,000 to go to the school.
Yeah.
So that's a financial trick, and I don't believe that. Charlie Baker is free to prove me wrong, but these Division III schools are the extension of travel sports in America.
What about D2 or D2, lower?
I don't know.
D1,
that could be different, but there isn't a whole lot of D1. You should be able to choose and to participate at the level that you wish. St. Joe's, and I know this is going long, but I think it's a pretty interesting conversation. So St. Joe's doesn't play football. St. Joe's is a small Catholic school in Philadelphia. It has a men's basketball team. It has sports. It has men's basketball that has always had to punch well above its weight.
Yep.
And sometimes it does. But it's never beaten Texas for a recruit. It occasionally gets some good kids from Philly to go there, and every once in a while they win an NCAA basketball tournament game. But it's never really been part of it. It's just if you give the platform and the opportunity, I think it was Ted Cruz was like, well, we love the NCAA basketball tournament because everyone's got a shot. And that is true. Just keep giving. But it's never been about money. If it was about money, St. Joe's would never win. They wouldn't even win in the Atlantic 10. St. Bonaventure sometimes, it's the same thing. Like even in the Atlantic 10, they'd be outpaced by, I think these teams are still in it, Virginia Commonwealth, UMass, things like that, right? URI, bigger state schools.
Well, Dayton, which funds basketball.
Dayton's got a nice basketball program. I just never trust these guys and it's going to end because they've been wrong so many times. But I think we're going up. Very interesting. I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm glad they're hopefully moving past, although 90% of the conversation is about NIL, moving past something that actually I think does matter. That you could it's certainly not. Well, we need a law to stop Utah from getting a car. I mean, they couldn't prove Bill Self, Adidas was paying players for Kansas, right? Despite all the evidence, but we're gonna make it so the Kansas AG, he investigates the case. Like you're never doing it. Stop with that. So I hope they are moving on.
I do want to go back and answer your original question, which was why not just let the NIL thing play out? Like, what are you arguing Congress for? Let it play out. And there, I'm just telling you their argument, right? Is let's have a federal standard so the state laws are preempted. Number one, number two, let's have transparency in some database. So I know you can disagree, and let's have an agent registry, and they're starting to create some of this. I don't know that any of it's going to be to the level that Congress, a law, would make it, but that's their argument. And one more thing, you said something really interesting, Dan, and that is in this employment scenario where college athletes would be deemed employees, you said, you know, everybody's going to have to make a decision on what level, right, you want to participate. Well, I mean, to me, it's are you paying athlete salaries as employees or not? And that is where the split comes in the NCAA.
You can split it, but you should still allow them to compete. I don't think that matters.
Yeah.
As long as St. Joe's still has some way to get in the basketball tournament. They're not looking for a whole lot at St. Joe's.
No, I mean,
St. Joe should be able to say, nah, they're employees, they're just volunteers. We just got this team.
Right. I mean, yes, this is, as Jill Bodensteiner said, this is largely a big-time football issue that trickles down to everyone else. If you still allow broad-based competition for national championships to make a national tournament, you may not win a national championship, but can you get into the national tournament
right
from across Division I, then I think you've saved what you need to save there. The other thing, mm-hmm. of course, is...
Yeah.
Are you? What about the Olympic sports? Where did what happens to them in this situation?
How are they funded? Right, if football is split out, which funds most of all of this, how are all these other sports funded? Now, at first, it might continue. Football might continue to fund them, but at some point, you split football out. When does football, an association, players' association, whatever, say, why are we funding all these sports? Yeah, why can't we keep some of this?
They've been saying it for years, but yes, if you split them out, it makes it easier for them to.
Yeah.
Secede, so to speak.
Well, all right, pretty interesting. I didn't think we'd go this long on it. I appreciate everyone who kept listening. I think it's a pretty good conversation. I try to go with what I'm interested in. All right, I promised the pepper story, and I'm giving you a pepper story.
Give it to us.
Mm-hmm. We'll end with this. We'll be a little more less serious.
Spicy to end with.
Oh, it's spicy, baby. Ed Curry. I did not know anything about this. South Carolina hot pepper expert. A lot of South Carolina going on.
Okay.
He is the guy who crossbred and grew the Carolina Reaper.
Oh, yeah.
That is hotter than most pepper sprays to use, this is an AP story, to subdue unruly criminals. Okay? He created the... Now, Ed Curry's interesting. He had a drug and alcohol addiction and helped defeat that. He's clean and sober now. We applaud that. By pouring his life into... breeding hot peppers.
Okay.
And he gets a dopamine rush by eating hot peppers now.
Mm.
Okay. So,
well, but the Carolina Reaper is famous. It is a famously hot pepper.
Famously the world's hottest pepper. Yeah. So, and look, if that's, I mean, I guess if better than meth, right? Have a hot pepper. I don't. Seems like we're just, you know,
presumably less likely to make terrible decisions on hot pepper than on meth.
Yeah, right. Okay.
I think I might pick meth. Jeez.
Well, I don't know. Yeah, I'd just like to say, hold on. Wait till you hear the rest of the story.
Yeah.
He has broken his world record with a pepper now that is three times hotter than the Carolina Reaper. Now, the Carolina Reaper. Okay, so if you want to know why this all has gone on, the jalapeno is 5,000 units on the Scoville heat unit.
Yep.
The habanero is, which was the record holder for a long time, is 100,000. And that's basically what was just naturally growing. Then along came this guy. And he creates the Carolina Reaper. It is at 1.64 million units on the Scoville heat. And there's all these things. Yes, and people get sick trying them. He's now created what he's called Pepper X. And it did more than warm his heart, the AP wrote. Oh, God.
Okay. Oh, no.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
This thing is 2.69 million units. Okay? So if you just bite into a jalapeno, it's 5,000. 2.69. Okay? By comparison, pepper spray that the cops use, 1.6 million units. Bear spray. You could take down the Fat Bear Week, 2.2 million. It is hotter than bear spray.
Oh, man, come on.
Okay, so now he created the...
Is this guy still alive?
He created the Carolina Reaper in 2013, and he blew it by sharing the seeds and losing control of the product and the name and name, image, and likeness, right? Blew it. Totally, like, he's like Reggie Bush, man, right? And so everybody created all these Carolina Reaper stuff. There's chips. There's all sorts of stuff. You can see chips. He's holding on to this one, but he is one of only five people that have tried Pepper X. I was feeling the heat for 3.5 hours, he said. Mm. Then the cramps came.
Oh, no.
Oh, God.
Those cramps are horrible.
Oh.
I laid out flat on a marble wall for approximately an hour in the rain, growing in pain.
Oh, my God. Yeah, give me meth.
After God. way worse than a hangover.
Like, horrible. Yeah.
You're just laying in the flat rain, like water in your mouth. You just open your mouth and hope. What if it doesn't rain? What if it doesn't rain? Pepper X. He said it is a crossbreed of the Carolina Reaper and a mysterious pepper that, quote, a friend of mine sent me from Michigan that was brutally hot. I'm going to have to do
some. Are you that friend?
I am not the friend, but I'm going to look around. I'm asking around. I'm asking around. We now have Pepper X. So he said the problem people do with these tests is you have to build up a tolerance, much like meth. You have to build up a tolerance to the heat. And so when the kids just do it, they can die. I mean, people die from this thing. He said it provides immediate brutal heat. He said only 5 people have tried it. Nobody should eat an entire Pepper X without having built up and being able to kind of knock down the Carolina Reaper with no problem. Okay, will any of you people, have you ever tried Carolina Reaper? I'm guessing no one here take the Pepper X.
No, I've never gone past habanero. So I can't get that far up the scale. Too many units. Pepper X, is Elon Musk involved?
I don't know. Everything's X now. Everything's X. Yeah, right. Pepper X.
I have acid reflux situation. Take a pill every morning. Probably from being raised in South Louisiana on the Mississippi coast too, with Cajun food all my life. And I can barely eat one cut of a jalapeno without it coming up. So, no, give me the meth instead.
Give me the meth. Okay. Is this the pinnacle, Curry said, of Pepper X? No, it's not the pinnacle. He says he can go beyond Pepper X.
To something that literally just like melts your hand when you touch it?
I don't know. I know a guy, this story, he was... I think it was in Kansas City or near Kansas City. And he had some wings that may have had the Carolina Reaper, like the super hot. So his mouth is burning, all that. He's at a bar with the wings. And, you know, you got it's on your hands and everything. He gets up. He's discomfort. He goes to the restroom. Try to tell the story the best way he can. And in the process of the restroom touches a part of his body that is very sensitive.
No, Dan. The marble floor for an hour and a half in the rain wasn't bad enough.
Said he was laying on a bar stool trying to sweat this through.
Oh, come on.
Those eat contests they put on the gloves, the surgeon gloves.
I learned at a young age at crawfish boils, a mini crawfish boil, that when you go to the bathroom during or after you've eaten crawfish, you got to be careful.
Hands free
or washing hands continuously. And I've had that happen, not with the pepper, but crawfish.
Careful out there, people. Head on a swivel. Pepper X and this mad scientist down in South Carolina is coming for you. Yeah. I'm not touching. No way. Anyway.
No. I'll eat a jalapeno in your honor, but that's as far as I'm going.
Yeah. So, all right.
Only on the College Football Inquirer can we go from athlete employment to touching your genitals with pepper on them.
You never know, man. You never know. So, so that's our show. Look, it's NBA season right now, right around the corner. Never a better time to sign up for Fantasy Basketball League with some buddies or even some strangers. Draft your league at yahoofantasy.com or in the Yahoo Fantasy app. Pretty excited for this Wembanyama. Wembanyama. How do you say it? Wembanyama. It's going to be pretty exciting.
Wembanyama, I think.
Yeah, that's it. It's going to be pretty good.
Just call him Wemby.
Wemby, baby. It's pretty exciting. Scoot Henderson, too. Imani Bates. A lot of good rookies coming in. But, man, Imani Bates. Anyway, that's our show. Continue to listen, subscribe. Thanks for listening to a long episode. And we will be back Thursday making picks. Race for the case. Talk to you later.